Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum.
And Matt Levine.
And we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts, welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Your source for real estate, home rehab, fixing and flipping for investor clients and residential buyers. Reach out to the Zach Pack today for real estate services. Follow the Zach Pack on social media and contact the Zach Pack for investment opportunities. Links in the bio.
Conches. Conches? I guess I don't know exactly how that's pronounced.
Conks. I don't know how to spell conk, but it's conk.
So would the plural be conks?
I don't know. I don't know if it's like honk is plural and singular.
Okay, this is the most important question we must answer tonight during this episode.
I mean, it might help if you go conch shells. That way you can do... Well, I don't know. Are they considered conch shells? I don't know.
They also talk alive. About snails a lot.
Yeah.
Snails.
True. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think Jaws the Revenge, I don't, it's like almost the perfect movie to wear a shirt ironically for, but I'm not quite on board with that.
I'm trying to figure out what the shirt would have on it besides Lorraine Gray's horrible haircut. It's so bad. It's just, that's the most, I think the word iconic is way overused these days. But that is a very iconic haircut. Second being, you know, Mario Van Peebles' haircut. But they're the two most unique things in that movie, like in terms of dating it.
Yeah. I was also noticing Michael Brody's wife. I think her name is Clara. Her hairstyle kept changing throughout the movie. It had a life of its own.
I feel like her accent changed throughout the movie also.
Oh, really?
I thought so. Maybe I don't know. She doesn't really get a lot of like screen time or dialogue at first, so maybe I just noticed it after a while. Might have been my imagination.
No, I think I kind of picked up on that too, although she doesn't have a lot of screen time, and when she does, it's like you feel like she just has to grab that spotlight and shine it on herself. And it's like, well, she's supposed to be an artist, and I don't know, man. I think it's weird because that was one of the things that kept falling off. I'm like, are they going to have sex everywhere? I don't want to see a sex scene in Jaws, in any Jaws movie. I just don't want there to be sex.
There was nothing but sex between them and arguing and taking out the trash.
The trash? What was that? Oh, my God.
Oh, God. That argument came out of nowhere. Yeah.
Oh, it sounded like one of those. You know, the screenwriter hates his wife, so he's like, man, fuck, she's not gonna, I hate when she tells me to take out the trash. I'm just gonna use that and put it in the thing. And it has no reason except for, I guess they're gonna make up.
Right.
In an awkward way.
Yeah.
I guess they were going for character depth, but it somehow doesn't seem to work, you know?
These were all things written on my notes. I wrote, Michael just argues with everyone. Relationship with wife is all sex and or arguing. Same with Jake, actually. Does Michael and Jake feel emasculated? I think I'm reading into that, but...
No, but I think the... Well, okay. And whatever. You're going to have to chop this whole thing up regardless. We'll get to the actual, you know, you guys have a structure. But, okay, this just occurred to me. Jaws the Revenge... kind of feels like the things that I might complain about a Jaws movie are the same things that people were complaining, including myself, about the prequels. That's not my Jaws. You know, this dumbass, whoever this is, Jagoff, who directed it, he ruined my childhood. You know, it all feels like this, like, You can't have sex in my Jaws movie. You can't have dream sequences in my Jaws movie. Multiple ones.
Right.
Like, I feel like all these arguments I wrote down and making, they sound childish, like a man who's over 40 shouldn't be complaining about. It's just it's a Jaws movie. It's not the one you remember or like. But there are those little things that make me think about, like, all the bitching people, including myself, did when prequels came out. It's like, this isn't Star Wars for me. It's like, well, it's not really for you anymore. It's for kids. No, man, it's for me, because I've been waiting 20 years for this. And people weren't waiting for Jaws the Revenge. They were just like, I don't know. I got to bring up one more point. I swear to God, I'll shut up about this.
That's great, man.
So I assume you both have, one of you has the DVD.
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. Because I bought it from Video Universe, which is going out of business in Robbinsdale, and bought a bunch of wonderful trash like Adventures of Ford Fairlane and of course this. This is like $5. I'm like, oh, shit. Vincent wants me to do this. I should buy a copy and actually watch it. So when you go, well, Vincent knows this for sure, but I'll just keep passing this, you know, throwing this. You probably know where I'm going with this, but Matt might not know. Okay. So there are two things on the DVD. There is the trailer, which I didn't bother watching because I probably have seen it. And then there are recommendations.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Here's the recommendations, though. When you click on recommendations, it's a still, you know, a still screen. Like, it's just a designed screen that says, not shitting you, if you enjoyed Jaws the Revenge, we recommend Jaws, Jaws 2, Jaws 3D. Who in their right mind is watching Jaws the Revenge and having and it hasn't seen those, any of those three? And yeah, that's where it comes into, like, the prequel idea. It's like, man, this isn't my Jaws. Like, man, Jaws the Revenge is the real movie. And then you do this prequel bullshit. It's fucking Jaws, Jaws 2, Jaws 3. No, that prequel stuff sucks. Why would that be a thing on the DVD? It's like, of course, nobody watching this would be some newbie to Jaws. This wouldn't be their starting point. I've heard of Jaws. Maybe I should try this little thing.
I
didn't even know it was a sequel.
Who knew?
I was so excited when I saw the bonus features, like that was an option. I was like, oh, I want some, like, in-depth documentary to help me gain some insight about the production of this film. Nope. Mm-hmm. Just it's just pointing me back to the better films, including Jaws 3D.
Yes.
You know, this is Jaws the Revenge is the low point of the series.
And I'll say it, man. I'm that old fart who saw Jaws 2 and Jaws 3D in the movie theaters as a kid. And we can get into this later, but I just remember just being like, kind of liking Jaws 2 and only having seen Jaws a few times, but like, this is its own film. It's its own, you know, but Jaws 3D, it was like a giant commercial for SeaWorld. And you're just going, first of all, there's like four 3D things in the whole movie, but I hated it. Even as a kid, I was like, this is so boring. Why isn't anything happening? Mm. Like, yeah. I want a dream sequence where people are, you know, getting eaten, and I want sex scenes. And that's what I got with Jaws the Revenge.
The movie made just for you, Jaws the Revenge.
Just this is what the true Jaws lover wants, is Jaws the Revenge.
Did you see Jaws the Revenge in theaters?
You know what? I did not. In fact, as I watched this, I realized I've only seen bits of it throughout the years. This is the first time I've ever seen this thing.
Mm.
So, me too. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Wow. It's the second time I've seen it within a year. So I'm taking the hits here.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That is a sacrifice.
Yeah, I agree. I also want to say, going back to Jaws 2, Vincent might have this. I don't know. Do you have, this is backwards, Jaws 2, the making of the Hollywood sequel? Look how thick this bastard is.
God.
It is so packed with crap you never wanted to know about Jaws 2. This was a person, Michael A. Smith, apparently was on, he was one of the original, I don't know. They had to shoot this most of this movie twice. Anyway, I won't go into Jaws 2.
Wow.
But they had a whole set of kids that were picked out, and the director, the studio hated him. They bumped his ass, and they brought back the original director they wanted, and he recast all the kids. Anyway, fantastic book and boring as shit. Even if you love Jaws, you're like, oh God, I don't want to talk about, there's little behind the scenes, but most of it is just like everybody talking about Roy Scheider being a dick. So it's just, he just wanted to tan himself the whole time. He didn't care. He didn't pay attention to schedules.
It's a hell of a tan though.
Oh, it's beautiful. He's bronze. It's gorgeous.
Maybe, you know, not unlike Michael Caine and Jaws the Revenge in some ways, right? He just wanted to go to the Bahamas, get a tan, pay for his house.
And that man, yeah, he paid for his house and he looks damn good doing the best Michael Caine in any film. He's so good. Like, he's so committed.
He is peak Michael Caine in this movie.
Oh, he really is. God, he's so amazing. Oh, man.
I was going to say, you already have like a nice like library behind you of Jaws material there, so you're going to have to add to it.
I have other Peter Benchley books here. How do I do that? Yeah, so I have Jaws. I have Beast, which was a television series in the 90s about a giant octopus, or it's a giant squid. Do you know that one, Sam?
I don't, no.
Oh, I remember as a kid, but it was a TV miniseries, so it's not easy to track down. And then some other books. I have read some other Peter Benchley, and I've tried to read some other Peter Benchley. I don't know. It's fine. He's good. But yeah, sometimes it's a little bit of a one-trick pony with sea monsters.
I don't want to get on too much of a tangent, but how is the actual source novel of Jaws? Because I've heard that it's actually not all that good and therefore like a perfect source for like a film adaptation. Would you agree with that? Both of you, if you've read it?
I like the movie a lot more.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah, I think if memory serves, and this has been years, but like there's a lot of novel stuff happening that you can do in a novel that takes you off on this sort of tangent of like, was it Hooper has an affair with Chief Ellen. Brody's wife or something? Yeah. It's stuff you don't need. And it's like the kind of fat you would trim away to make the screenplay just more, you know, right between the eyes. But I remember it being really good. I just don't remember. I remember a lot of weird tangents, which is why you write books. Like, it's a fun way to get off on a certain, oh, this character does this, this happens here, and something happens, how the shark dies, I don't remember, it's something simple, and that's why, you know, Spielberg was like, no, we gotta blow it up. It's like, you can't blow up a pressure tank. It's like, look man, they've been in my hands for like 90 minutes. I could have a UFO come down and pick it up and they'd have to believe it because I sold them all the way through. But it's something real. He changed. I don't remember that. Maybe you do, Vincent. But it's something real simple. It's like, oh, they shoot it between the eyes, or something real simple. And it's like, that's not how you end a blockbuster.
If I remember correctly, I don't know. I think Quint kills it with a harpoon.
Harpoon, yes.
But then, honestly, it may be as easy as this, as cliche as this. The rope of the harpoon gets around Quint's leg and pulls him under, and he dies that way.
Yeah, and there's something about the shark drowns in its own net or some net or something. It's like, that can't be an ending. Like, that's just Spielberg, you know, knew what he was doing. He's like, that can't be. That's very unclimactic, and unclimactic isn't even a word, but I'm using it anyway.
Well, cool. It's cool to hear about the book because I've never read it. So hopefully I will at some point. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a quick read. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Ellen has an affair with Hooper in the book. In Jaws the Revenge, she's getting her rocks off with Michael Caine, who plays Hoagie.
Well, and you know, that I took an acting for film class, and the textbook was Michael Caine's acting for film based on like a video series he'd done. And it's just packed. It's so well written, and maybe it's just transcriptions. I don't know. It's so bite-sized, you could literally turn to any page and know how to act for film. Just him saying, like, you know, if acting for theater is surgery with a scalpel, then acting for film is surgery with a laser. pick up everything, every tiny little nuance. If they're doing a close up, you can't, you have to go very small. It has to be so real. But part of that is like when you read some of the stuff, he uses examples, none of them being Jaws the Revenge, but he uses like really great examples. He's like, there's this scene in Hannah and Her Sisters or whatever. Watch what I'm doing and see what the other actor is doing at the same time, because I'm the focus, but that person is the most important person in the scene. It's like acting 101 for people who don't know, who've never taken acting 101. It's just brilliant. And well, yeah. What was the meme this past year? It was like about Muppet Christmas Carol. It's like, not once do you think he's talking to somebody's hand with a sock on it. That dude is committed to playing with another actor. Those Muppets are actors, and he's so serious about it, and you believe it. And I'm not even a big Muppet Christmas Carol fan, but Jesus, that, come on. Like, he is brilliant in it. He's so good in it. So yeah. I agree.
Oh, that's great. I could go on from talk about Michael Caine forever, and not to go too deep into, because I think I'm looking too deeply, but I was fascinated by Michael and Jake's relationship, because they are always bickering with each other. And I think it relates to, again, the fact that maybe the writers were in a dark place themselves. I don't know, but again, Michael's just arguing with a lot of people. And he and Jake, yeah, it's interesting how Jake wants to pursue the shark, which you could say is much more of a stronger animal than the conch. No offense to conchs out there. But I don't know. If you wanted to like put some sort of psychoanalysis on it, like what does the shark represent versus a conch? And why does Jake want the shark and Michael's okay with the conch?
Well, and there was all this stuff about grant money running out. And, you know, that's always a big thing for, you know, any kind of, you know, work in science. It's all about the grant money and how we get paid and how do we live. And there's that huge frustration. I like that sort of butting heads. If they were just buddy-buddy the whole time, you know, it's about conflict, as we know. There has to be a conflict even when it's not, you know, earth shattering. But yeah. I'm not a Mario Van Peebles fan. I mean, but he's very serviceable in this movie. He's got the personality. He's the Hooper. He brings out some really fun little things. So I can't fault him for that. But
yeah, he's a fun character. I wish the other guys on the boat got some time to shine.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Or yeah, like any about those. Any other Bahamian character in the movie, I kind of wish they had a little bit more screen time. They're kind of just like background exoticism, but yeah, maybe not surprisingly. But I do think it's funny with the Michael character, like, you know, his mom, Ellen, like, tell you, like, she says, like, none of our family can go in the water again. And then, like, as soon as possible, like, they're all going in the water again, like, yeah. Like, including herself. And she's, like, you know, yeah, like, yeah, like when Michael is going along with what Jack wants to do, it's like, man, this is like the one thing you shouldn't do. You should at least tell your mom about it, you know. But of course, that's the conflict, like you said, Sam. Like, that's what drives the movie forward. So I get it, right. But it's a little like, wow, okay, like you're just gonna completely ignore what your mother said to you.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. And he doesn't know. He feels so bad about that. It keeps him up at night. Like he's like, I can't, you know, I can't have mom disapprove of me, but I have to do this. Yeah.
I would buy that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ellen spends all her time in the water, ironically.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a short-lived proclamation that the family can never go back in the water again.
All right. Anything else in there? Do we have form and aesthetic we wanted to talk about, Matt?
You personally, for me, I think I might tie that into my good, the bad, and the campy, because I have kind of a lot to say about that in that section. So okay. I'm good for now. Yeah.
No, maybe just a question, but would this flick have worked better if it was just set in Amity? Because I found myself, as we talked about earlier, I found myself going, oh, man, it's Amity at night in the wintertime. Like, that's something we've never seen. And knowing it was set there at Christmas time, I wasn't really looking forward to all the stuff happening in the Bahamas. Then when we got there, I was fine. But I was like, oh, I wanted just to be at Amity, be in Amity just for the hell of it. But that's not really a good, that's just a, you know, whatever, pipe dream of mine, which is a really sad pipe dream, if that's what we're calling pipe dreams.
And I do like the Bahamas setting. I like that we can go underwater more easily. Because if, Sam, if this was in Amity, I think that one might have been more difficult or less clear, just because, like, the Bahama waters are lend themselves to clarity.
Yeah, I see that. That makes sense. And having a new setting is probably better anyway. It just, it says, it's interesting because it says something that Matt set up earlier, which is like the things you didn't see in other Jaws movies, which is nighttime. Well, Jaws had nighttime stuff, but like it's not all sunny and you get a winter time. I love the idea of it being set in winter, but then it'd be like, well, then no one would be in the water. It would just, it was a lot of problems.
So we can focus on the human drama.
Yes, it's true.
There was one really cool, it was a quick shot when Michael Caine, he flies by the boat at the same time the shark is jumping out of the water. It's like a quick cut that was like really dynamic. And I was like, whoa, I want more of that in this movie.
You know why you didn't get more of that? It was a total accident. It was just the cameraman just happened to get it. It was totally planned. Just make sure there's, oh, this, I was going to say the second, you know, second unit, but did they have two units? It was probably just one. And they just happened to get it all in focus and they were just lucky. That's why you didn't get more of those moments, Vincent. That's exactly why.
It was a happy accident. Yes.
And lastly, the Jets had a song called You Got It All that's in here in one of the scenes. And I don't like the Jets. I know we're in Minnesota, but I don't like them. I don't like those clean cut kids and their danceable music. So that's part of the bad Devil's too. Music. Devil's music from Minnesota. And they're a family of kids, clean cut. All right. That's all I got.
Those are good. I would agree with all of those. And now I need to listen to some Jets because I don't get the reference.
This was a big hit for them, but they also had a song. Their first song was, I got a crush on you. How did you know? You found out. I got a crush on you. I think that was their first hit. But You Got It All is a slow dancing. It's for proms crap. It's trash. Anyway.
I'm also not familiar, but that was a great like rendition. I feel like we should devote an entire episode to your musical performance. That was great.
Fellas, your podcast is going down in patrons if you do that. You're just going to start losing people. They're going to be like, why are we giving money to these guys? What is happening?
Well, you had a great Gamera gong, you know, turn at the gong. So,
yeah, that goes a long way, though. That's true.
Yeah, it's I love seeing foreign cinema just in general, and I'm really fascinated by Mexican cinema and the culture that it portrays. My only exposures have been the films of Guillermo del Toro. Admittedly, that's limited, and something like The Untamed does give me some insight into sort of the urban landscape, the countryside of just like the family drama that's going on.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have Guillermo del Toro as well as like Alfonso Cuarón, Alejandro González Iñárritu as well, who, you know, all three of them have kind of gotten a lot of exposure and have made some movies in Hollywood before. So they're like very well-known Mexican directors who you know, they kind of work in like sort of a mainstream style. And I don't say that as a criticism. They just like, you know, they're very good at telling stories. Their movies are very entertaining, well-made, things like that. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of have the opposite extreme where there are these Mexican directors who are really trying to be anti-mainstream and be like very brutally honest about some of the more unpleasant aspects of life. And I think you need both of those things as a balance in cinema.
For sure. I've never seen those Lars von Trier films. My brother was obsessed with them. He was also a film major. So I always saw them lying around the apartment we shared together in college. They looked weird. They looked scary, which is right in line with The Untamed. So, I mean, what are the comparisons, the parallels that you see in those films and The Untamed?
I think he really hates handheld cameras. Like, he sets up the shot like it is the frame of a painting. And that doesn't mean that they're always static shots, but he does use static shots pretty often. Other times is like a very, very long zoom in where like we start with a pretty wide shot and it just like really slowly, creepily, like gets closer and closer to the action. And it's so slow that you almost don't really realize it until suddenly like your perspective has totally shifted. I think there are a lot of good examples of that in The Untamed. I think also he shoots, again, like nature and just like scenes of, you know, trees or the sun or animals in like really foreboding ways. In The Untamed, there are some shots that like are from the ground up looking at these towering trees that just like are really kind of imposing and intimidating and seem almost threatening in a way. And that's something that I think, you know, Melancholia does that as well. And then on the other side of that, you do have these urban spaces, which you kind of already mentioned, Vincent, which seem, you know, so gritty that they're like can't possibly be real. Like they're kind of dingy in a way. It seems like maybe there's like something hidden around the corner that you don't really know who or what it is. I think Nymphomaniac does a good job of that, as well as The Untamed and some of the scenes that are set in like in the house that Ale and Angel live in. So yeah, there are a lot of kind of visual overlaps, and I think kind of overall they really do contribute to like a really kind of scary, intimidating, like foreboding atmosphere.
Yeah, that's a good point. See, yeah, these are the types of movies that I need to watch with somebody with more of a trained eye than just because, you know, I don't often watch movies like this, but I love talking about them. And I'm doing my best to like keep an eye out for these.
Totally,
things.
Yeah. And you know, I'm learning so much about Suitmation and Rubber Suits and Toho and everything. So it's, you know, it's all about learning here. That's what Camp Kaiju is.
Ah, all about learning. Yep.
That's our moment of wholesomeness in a discussion about a very messed up movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just thought of the tentacled aliens from The Simpsons.
Craig and I think, yeah.
Forget their names, but
yeah, oh, no. this would be a very different movie if one of those aliens was in it instead. Probably wouldn't work as well.
I bet. Well, yeah. I bet this is their favorite movie.
They see it as a comedy, probably.
Yeah. All right. What
should
else?
We get into the form and aesthetic? Unless there's anything, any other themes that you want to talk about?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're talking about the crucifixes. I think that that's just emblematic of, again, the religion, the pervasive religion, and.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, like when I saw all the crucifixes and not to mention Angel's name, I was like, this seems a little bit overdone. I don't really get all the religious symbolism. But you're totally right that Mexico, for the most part, is a rather conservative Catholic nation. So, yeah, that symbolism makes a lot more sense with that kind of context. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it's like, how much do you want to read into it? Because any good set designer would put a crucifix in the home of a Mexican family. Right. But I don't know. I am not a scenic.
But it's a good point. You know, it's because it reflects their lives so accurately, it's also like an important part of the world of the film. So yeah.
Yeah. And then next month,
We have some good stuff coming up. First of all, I'll just say I'm really excited about Frankenstein Conquers the World with the Frankenstein Minute hosts. That'll be a very fun conversation. Next month, we have the movie Them, classic monster movie, which I have never seen. Giant Ants, you can't go wrong. I'm very excited for that. As well as Jaws the Revenge, which is Vincent's pick. I last saw it a long time ago and barely remember it, so I'm very excited.
Well, one of those movies was just announced today that there is a remake happening. Them is getting a remake with Michael Giacchino. He's a film composer that does a lot of Disney, Pixar, Marvel stuff, and recently directed.
I knew that he was a composer. I did not know that he went into film directing. That's awesome. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, so Them will be his feature film debut. Werewolf by Night.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I heard about the remake of Them. I'm really excited about it. You know, lots of good stuff coming up. So stay tuned for all of our 2023 episodes.
Wait, okay, yes. So speaking of Patrick, I have not talked to him, but I did watch 20,000 Leagues Over the Sea, Under the Sea over the break. It's a good time.
I have not watched it yet. I'm excited to watch it, and it's probably way more of a good time than The Untamed, I would imagine.
Yeah. It's a different good time.
Not to jump the gun on that, but yeah.
But phallic symbols do present themselves in 20,000 Leagues. That's my argument. There is nary a woman in the film, just a bunch of men aboard a submarine. Just doing sailor
stuff.
That
sounds great. Phallic symbols can be our theme for January.
Yeah. What movies did you have you watched?
What have I watched? I rewatched the movie Pulse, the Japanese horror movie, which is one of my favorites. I wrote about that for the Trilon blog, so that was pretty fun. Thank you. Yeah. It's been, congrats, you know, it has been fun, but also kind of a lot of work, and we're not getting paid for it, so. You know, but that's how it goes with writing and editing. That's how it's been for like the last 15 years for me. So nothing surprising there. That's okay.
Yeah. You wrote another one.
Yeah.
About
Ball
that
of Fire. Rom-com. That's an awesome movie. The Howard Hawks movie with Barbara Stanwyck. Love that movie so much. So good.
Howard Hawks
is an amazing filmmaker. Yeah. And like Ball of Fire is rarely mentioned among his best movies, but I think it is really, really great. And that's just a sign of how many classics he made, you know?
Yeah, seriously, including The Thing from Another World, which he produced. Yeah. He didn't direct it, but yeah.
I love The Thing from Another World for sure. And His Girl Friday, the original Scarface, Bringing Up Baby, Rio Bravo. Excuse me, Only Angels Have Wings. So many just like classic, amazing movies. I guess long story short, it's been fun to write about those movies, even though it's been kind of a lot of work because... this person, Olga, and I are also like editing and posting all the stuff for the blog. So, it's been fun, but, anyway, sorry. So I watched Pulse, I watched Glass Onion, which I didn't actually like all that much. A little too.
Yeah. Go on. I'll ask you more about that. Cause I did see that as well.
What else? I watched a weird movie called Lux Aeterna. It's a French movie. It's about a director and an actress who are making a movie about witches. And then they're kind of like bullied sort of by like all these male producers and cinematographers. And like, so it's kind of a feminist movie, but it's also like intentionally offensive sort of at times. Very, very weird movie. What else have I seen? I think a couple other ones, but nothing's coming to mind right now.
Yeah, I had a week where I was watching like a new one or two movies a day. I can't remember them all, but I did watch Glass Onion. I didn't not like it. I did like it. I thought it was solid. I thought it was entertaining. I just, you know, I don't know if it's fair to compare it to the first one because it's like an anthology series and it's good in different ways. But I can go back to the first one in ways that I'm not interested in going back to Glass Onion.
That makes sense. And I agree with that for sure. I think it's fair to compare the two because I think the second one is so similar to the first one. Like, I feel like it kind of you can't not compare them, sort of. And I just feel like the sort of tactic of, like, extremely broad and obvious political satire where, like, there's, like, one very saintly character. Like, in the first movie, it's the Ana de Armas character, and here's Janelle Monáe. And then, like, almost everybody else, except for Benoit Blanc, mm-hmm. like, you know, just, like, the most obvious, like, archetype of, like, something wrong with society or politics right now. It felt more surprising the first time around, and the second time around, it's like, you're just going to do this again? Like, it's a little bit disappointing, I think, you know?